Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome for Parsha Perspectives on Parshas Truma. We're actually not going to be talking about Parshas Truma. We're going to be talking about Shabbos Zachor, which is this past Shabbos, the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. I want to share with you two short thoughts, two separate ideas about Amalek and the mitzvah to remember Amalek. When we laid the Parsha of Zachor this past Shabbos, that was one Parsha of Amalek. But early on in the Torah, at the end of after Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have the parsha of Amalek actually coming to attack Klal Yisrael. And in that parsha, which will be the laning that we are going to lane on Purim morning, the Torah says the following. Famous pasuk that says, Vayomer, Hashem says, Ki yad al kes ka. Hashem lifts up his hand, swearing my hand I swear by my kes ka, the throne of Hashem, Milchama la Hashem b'Amalek, I'm going to battle Amalek midar dar. And Rashi, of course, asks, why does the Torah say, spell these words wrong? Case instead of kisei, his throne. Why does it say it was just without the aleph? Ka, yud hey, instead of the yud with the hey, with the vav and the hey. So Rashi explains, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was nishba, she'ein shmo shalem, vein kiso shalem, until Hashem will be mocha shmo shel Amalek. Only in that time in the future, Bez Hashem, we should be zochet too speedily, when Hashem's glory is complete and Amalek is completely destroyed, that's when Hashem's throne will be complete and that's when Hashem's name will be complete. I'd like to understand, what does it mean that Hashem's throne is not Shalem, but will be Shalem? What is Hashem's throne? What is Hashem's name? What does it mean that it will be complete? It won't complete. It's not complete. It will be complete. There's a, well before the Bar Ilan Responsive Project, which is a computer program that I use, that I could look up any word to see how many times it appears in Tanakh, in Chazal, there's a tshuva sefer called the Tshuvas Heichal Yitzchak. And this sefer writes that if you open up a Tanakh, you'll find that the word Yerushalayim appears 656 times throughout Tanakh. And in every single one, the word Yerushalayim is spelt chaser, without the yud, Yerushalayim, without the yud mem at the end. Yerushalayim, it's spelled chaser. The word of Yerushalayim is spelled missing a letter. Only 3 out of 656 places is Yerushalayim spelled male with that additional yud towards the end. If you open up a Shulchan Aruch to see in Hilchas Gittin, where it talks about how to write a get, it writes there at the back of the Shulchan Aruch, it says, how do you spell various names of men? How do you spell various names of women? And then it says, how do you spell various names of cities? In Europe, you know, different European cities, how do you spell their names? And in that list of that, how you spell the names on a get, it says, Yerushalayim is always supposed to be spelled chaser, like it appears almost always in Tanakh. And similarly, when you write a ksuva, Baruch Hashem, it's also spelled chaser, without the yud. So there's something about Yerushalayim that is always spelled chaser. And that's because Yerushalayim is Hashem's throne. Yerushalayim is Hashem's throne, and that Slach, one of the commentators on the Gemara in Brachos, writes that Ne'ata Yerushalayim Chaser Yud. Right now we live in a world where Yerushalayim is Chaser. It's missing that Yud. Why? Because we live in this world of Amalek. And as long as Amalek is still here, Hashem's Kisei, Yad Al Kes Ka, Hashem's Kisei is not Shalem. And what is the throne of Hashem? The throne of Hashem is Yerushalayim. And it's not just a cute idea that Hashem's throne is Yerushalayim. It's actually an explicit pasuk in Yirmiyah Perek Gimel. The pasuk in Yirmiyah writes, "Ba'esahi, there will come a time yikaru li Yerushalayim kisei Hashem." Yerushalayim itself is called Hashem's throne, and therefore we live in a time that right now Yerushalayim, Hashem's throne, is somewhat lacking. There's a little bit of lacking in what Yerushalayim has to offer us spiritually, and therefore Yerushalayim is missing out a little bit. The kisei of Hashem is lacking. And therefore, it's only case ka, not kisei Hashem. But is that all it means that Yerushalayim is missing? Is that all it means that Hashem's throne is lacking? It just means that Yerushalayim is spelled without a yud. We lost that we dropped a yud from Yerushalayim, and it's spelled one way now. We spelled it a different way. La'asid lavo. Is that all it means that Hashem's name is lacking and His throne is lacking? I like to take this idea of what it means a little bit deeper. That Hashem's throne is not complete so long as Amalek has a foothold in our world. I'd like to share a beautiful idea that I saw from Herschel Schechter in his Sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon. He writes, who is Amalek? What is Amalek? He said, Amalek is the symbol of the Hatzlacha of Rishaim Ba'olam Hazeh. Let me explain. as long as you see people who are doing bad, who seem to have hatzlacha, that is a presentation, a manifestation of Amalek. Or in different words, as long as we live in a world where we have the question of tzadik v'ralo, rasha v'tovlo, the question that the philosophers called theodicy, as long as there exists this philosophical question of looking at the world and say, why does this happen? Why do good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people? As long as we could ask that question, that means that there's something lacking in our perception of how Hashem runs the world. Because in a way, in a world that we would be able to see Hashem running it so clearly, in a world that would be indicative and that would present itself as Hashem's running it, when there would be a shilton gomer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, when his reign would be complete, when his dominion would be completely realized, we would see you do a mitzvah and all of a sudden candy is dropped out of the sky. You do an aveir, all of a sudden you get hit by lightning. You know, not exactly, but something along those lines. We'd see more of a correlation between tov and ra, schar and onash. And that would be Hashem's reign. That would be Hashem's dominion over the world. And so long as we live in a world that has that darkness, that has those clouds of unclarity, those clouds of question mark, when we don't understand why these are happening, why good things, people, you know, how could this, all these things be? So long as we don't live in a clear world, that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reign, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's throne, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kisei is not shalem. And so long as Amalek, again Amalek, which represents the Hatzlacha of Rishayim in this world, is still present, as they still have a foothold, Hashem's reign is not supreme. Hashem's reign is not complete. Ein hakisei shalem, ad shiyimacha shmo shel Amalek. Now, at the end of Az Yashir, we mention a pasuk that talks about Hashem's name in the future compared to now. V'haya Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz. V'yom ha'hu yeh Hashem echad u'shmo echad, Rabbi Seder aleinu. Hashem's name will be one. Hashem will be one, and Hashem's name will be one. Asks the Gemara in Psachim on Daf Nun. Wait, you mean in the future Hashem's going to be one? That means now Hashem is not one. Now there are multiple gods, that's not so good. Now in the future Hashem's name will be one, and now Hashem has multiple names. What kind of multiplicity of gods are you talking about? That's Bizman Hazeh. And the Gemara says yes. We live in a time that now it seems like Hashem is not one. This world, says the Gemara Psachim, lo ka'olam hazeh olam haba. Our world is not like the world to come. Olam hazeh, good things happen and bad things happen. When something good happens, al besoros tovos, what do you say? You hear good news? You won the lottery? Omer baruch hatov hametiv. Thank you, Hashem, for doing such wonderful things to me, to my family. And God forbid the opposite, al besoros rose, the person finds out some terrible news, a tragedy. Omer baruch dayan ha'emes. That's the Jewish response. I don't understand, Hashem, but I know that you're judged, you're righteous and you're just. However, says the Gemara Pesach, la'olam haba kulo hatov ha'metiv. It's a world of entirely hatov ha'metiv. In other words, right now we live in a world that seems to have two presentations of God. There's a good God, there's a bad God, there are good forces, good, bad forces. La'asid love will all be good. What does that mean? Rabbeinu Yonah says that when a person makes a bracha of, just like we make the bracha of hatov ha'metiv, when good things happen, so too when something bad happens, we should make the bracha of, God forbid, when a person has to make hadayin ha'emes. You hear chassidish stories of the rabbis who used to do this. When a person would recite Dayan HaEmes, they should say it with simcha, just as the simcha that they have when they recite HaTov HaMetiv, with the realization that ultimately Hashem does whatever he does only for the good, only for the good of a Jewish person. Rabbeinu Yonah says, in a funny way, I'll explain what I mean by a funny way, that a person, when a person has to say Dayan HaEmes, has some bad news, whatever it might be, a person should be able to realize that the bracha in this challenge, it comes to be mechaper averos. And that itself should bring a person simcha, the fact that they have the opportunity to get a kapara. I'll tell you a quick anecdote that happened to me when I was a rabbi in my previous community. There was a certain young man, a couple, who was came, you know, beginners, they he came from a, I think, a not a secular background that had become religious, and he was studying to become a rabbi himself. He went for smicha, and he wasn't familiar with, you know, yeshivish lingo. He wasn't familiar with, you know, the way people in the, let's say, the Hamish world speak, but he was a very intelligent and very motivated young man. He and his wife had a fire in their apartment, and I called them a day or two after the fire. And I said, you know, I'm sorry. You know, it was Baruch Hashem, nobody was hurt, but they lost some of their material, and it was very shocking. It was very frightening for them, you know, to have a real fire in their apartment. I said, you know, I wanted, you know, I'm calling to just, you know, say I'm sorry. I heard about the fire, and I hope everything's okay. I just wanted to give you chizuk. And then I said, you know, zolzayna kapara, it should be a kapara for your averis. And he said, Rabbi Orlean, do you mean to accuse me of being a sinner? Are you saying that because I sinned, that's why my house caught on fire? And he gave me a Misha Berech, he gave me a Misha Para for 5 minutes. He was screaming at me, Rabbi Orlean, how dare you cause me of being a sinner? How dare you say that this fire that happened in my house is because... I said, no, I'm just saying, you know, I learned in Lakewood for a bunch of years. And yet we say in Yiddish, Zolzayna Kapara, Zolzayna Kapara. Anything that a Jew has, any experience that a Jew experiences, any difficulty that a Jew faces, the first reaction we're supposed to have is Zolzayna Kapara, Shabia Kapara. I'm not accusing you of being a sinner. I'm not telling you you're a bad person. I'm not saying that this fire came because you have to work on this. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying whatever happens to a Jew, we always have the attitude of Zolzayna Kapara. That's, says Rabbeinu Yonah, is what the Gemara tries to tell us, that we should have the simcha when we say Hatova, when we say Dayan HaEmes, we should try to rejoice and realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does whatever he does somehow to make us better people. But it's more than that. The Tzlach, in his commentary on Psachim, says there's a very powerful pasuk that talks about the Asad Lavo. Odecha, not Odecha Hashem, ki nisani, not that one. Odecha, I will thank you, ki anaftabi, because you're angry at me. What does that mean? I thank you, Hashem, because you're angry at me? What it means is that sometime in the future we will understand how all the things that seem to be, that presented themselves as Hashem being angry at me, all the things that I seem to somehow, you know, I don't understand why Hashem is doing it to me. It seems like he's punishing me. Someday I will be able to say thank you, Kianatmi. That thing that you did in the past when you got angry at me, you gave me some challenge. Thank you, Hashem, for that. That's a wonderful thing. That's what it means. That lost in love, we're only going to say Hatova Meitiv. In this world, we say things. We see things in two ways. We see things as good for us, as bad for us. Lost in love, we'll be able to understand. We'll have that wider perspective of seeing that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to us is ultimately for the good. You know, I used this image last week in one of my shiurim. You sort of picture Hashem sitting at a giant easel. An easel. And there are an infinite amount of dots. And every dot is a different point in our lives. There are dots of disappointment. There are dots of joy. There are dots that feel so meaningful. There are dots that seem dots in our life that are pretty inconsequential. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits there at the easel with a pen, a pencil, a paintbrush, whatever it is, connecting all the dots. Connecting all the dots so that when he's finished, there's this incredible masterpiece, this picture that shows you from the beginning of time till the end of time how every single dot on this board brings to the ultimate ge'ula. I want to share with you a story that perhaps could reflect the idea of understanding how things turn out later on, perhaps when a person doesn't understand when they're going through it. Happened in Florida, I think about 10, 20 years ago. There was a young couple. The name that I saw was Spitzer. I don't know if it's a real name. I don't know if they changed the name. Spitzer family, a couple, and they were married for many years, and they were not able to have children. And they tried all kinds of fertility interventions, and nothing seemed to work. And years passed, and many years passed, and finally, as the family was nearing, it was at the cusp of just, you know, the point where they wouldn't be able to have children, they had a certain type of fertility intervention, and they were zocha to become pregnant. And as you might know, when people go through various certain types of fertility with IVF, there could be multiple fetuses. So it was a multi-fetal pregnancy, and high-risk multi-fetal pregnancy with an older woman. And she had quintuplets. This lady had quintuplets. Now, this couple was had a very hard time, you know, meeting, having ends meet. They didn't have much money. They could barely pay their rent, certainly with their medical bills, but even without that, they had a tough time paying rent. And now that they go from, you know, from 2 to 7 and, you know, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, all of a sudden they now, she can't work anymore because she has to take care of her new play group that's just her own family. So they lose her income, and now she has to have the incredible, they have to hire a nurse to help out, and then they have all the, you have to buy 5 cribs and 5 of everything. And the community realized, the rabbi and the community realized that this family needs help. So the community or the rabbi or somebody connected a certain lady, a certain elderly woman who's very wealthy, named Mrs. Gordon, that she will basically adopt this young family and support them in this stage of their lives because they needed the help. And Mrs. Gordon was very happy to do so, and she felt she had the means to do so, and she was happy to do so, and she knew the need was genuine. And she wanted to get to know this family. So she spoke on the phone with this new mother a number of times. And she said, you know, I'd like to come meet you. I'd like to meet your family, this new family that you have. So they arranged whatever it would be a Tuesday morning to come by for some coffee. And the woman, Mrs. Gordon, comes, knocks on this young family's door and sits down in the dining room. And as they're talking, this Mrs. Gordon, this elderly woman who's the benefactor, looks on the dining room wall and she sees there's an old picture, an old black and white photo of a young woman. And she looks at it. She looks a little bit startled. She said, who's that? Who's that on the wall behind you? And the young mother turns around and said, oh, that's my mother when she was young. And Mrs. Gordon starts shaking, starts breaking down, crying, and she says, that's your mother? I owe that woman my life. After she composed herself, she tells the following story. I spent my teenage years in Bergen-Belsen, and we had 5 girls that all came from a similar background or all came from the same city, whatever it was. We had 5 girls, and we committed to ourselves, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 16-year-old girls, and we committed between ourselves that we are all going to keep mitzvahs, even if it's going to be hard. We're going to try to do as much as we can to do mitzvahs. And Hanukkah was coming, and the 5 of us committed that we want to light Hanukkah candles in Bergen-Belsen. The problem is, there's no oil, there's no menorah. So we decided that we were going to take a little bit of our margarine rations, as little as we got, we were going to separate a little bit of the margarine that we got for a few days, for a few weeks, and keep it so that we'll have enough oil to burn the margarine. We'll use the margarine as our oil to burn, to light a candle each night of Hanukkah. Problem is, we needed something to hold the margarine, to hold like a kli, like a menorah. So we figured, this is what people used to use, we had to get a potato. So where do you get a potato? You get a potato in the kitchen. The problem is the kitchen has guards. They checked around a little bit and they realized that the guard for the kitchen leaves at midnight, and the next guard sometimes takes them a few minutes to get to the kitchen door. So between 12 and 12:05 a.m., the door of the kitchen is not properly guarded. And so one night, a few days before Hanukkah, the five of them go and they sort of position each other wherever they need to position. So one goes in, one gets their back, and one's looking around, and they end up getting caught. They end up getting caught. And their numbers are recorded and written down, their numbers, their names, their numbers, whatever it is. The next morning at roll call in the camp in Bergen-Belsen, the commandant says, number so-and-so, 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 please step forward. And the 5 young ladies step forward. And the commandant says, because you made the very bad decision to steal from the food of the Nazi war effort, you are sentenced to death. You're going to be hung, you know, whatever, one day next week. Because you're stealing from the Nazi war effort, from the food for the Nazi soldiers. That was their Mishpat Mafes. So there's still a few days before this execution was to occur. And that night or the next night, the girls had, you know, huddling, trying to see what could they do, what could they do about just to save their lives. And they know that there was one lady in the camp, a young Jewish woman. And this young Jewish woman was multilingual. She spoke French, she spoke German, she spoke English, she spoke Russian. And she was Jewish, and because of her multilingual capacities, the Nazis asked her to translate the radio. Whatever came in on the radio, she would sit by the radio all day and translate whatever messages would be coming in from whatever languages she would hear and feed the information to the camp commanders. Because they valued her contributions, she wasn't living in the regular barracks. She had her own bunk and she was fed properly. So the girls, these five girls, tried to knock on her bunk late at night that night or the next night, and told her what happened, and we're going to be executed because we did. She says, "Get away from me! Get away from me! I want to have nothing to do with you! Get away from me! Get away from me!" She chased them back, and that was their that was their chance. They lost their chance, and the next morning, as the commandant decreed, five women were called to step forward. I don't want to get gory with the gory details, but five nooses were arranged in the camp, the central field of the camp, and the execution was prepared. All of a sudden, at the far side of the square, in the middle of the camp, they see a little commotion right near the commandant. That girl, that Jewish girl, that girl who did the who translated the radio, approached the commandant, and at first the commandant seemed amused, and he was like chuckling, he was laughing. Then he looked annoyed, then he looked frustrated, then he looked angry, then he pushed her away. And then she came back, and they didn't know what she was saying. They didn't hear any of the conversation, but they saw that this girl was speaking emotionally. Her arms were flailing, and he looked very annoyed. He looked very angry. But finally, the commandant screamed out, "Put them back! Put the girls back!" And now Mrs. Gordon turns to this young mother. "That woman, that multilingual woman, was the woman I see in the picture. That was your mother." Now it was the turn of this young mother to start crying. And after she composed herself, she said, "Now I can understand something I never understood. Right before I had my quintuplets, I had a dream. And my mother was telling to me, in Yiddish, finif far finif, five because of five. Finif far finif, five because of five. And I didn't understand, what is she saying? Finif far, and I was asking my mother, finif far finif, what do you mean five because of five, five because of, what do you mean? And I didn't understand what she meant. And now, I'm zoche to understand what that means. Five because of five. Not always are we zoche to connect all those dots, but those dots always connect. We're not always to know, and we're not always zoche to see the result, to see what comes out from Hashem's decrees and Hashem's situations that He sends our way, but we have to know that everything is, that those dots are always connected, and those dots always will be connected, and all those dots will always bring us to a better place. We should be zoche to always see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us, appreciate what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us, and hopefully with that, whenever we do face a challenge, we do face something that stands in our way, we do face something that's difficult for us, we should always be able to recite, to realize that every situation is ultimately a HaTov HaMeitiv situation. Even though right now, because of our human perspective, not our divine perspective, our human perspective, we say on it, Hayadana, Dayan HaMS, but we have to realize that it's true essence, it's really, everything is really HaTov HaMeitiv. We should be zoche to always see the HaTov HaMeitiv in our lives and the lives of Klal Yisrael.